Welcome, everybody, to the debut episode of Far From Vesuvius, the English-speaking Napoli podcast. My name is Ken, and joining me today on our first podcast is Kirsten Schlewitz. Kirsten, how are you doing today?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. I overslept, but we're going to work through that. It's okay. And Marco Cubani D'Onofrio. Marco, how's it going?
I'm good, man, and I must confess, I totally didn't even realize that this was the first official Far From Vesuvius podcast, which is crazy because it seems like we changed our name so long ago, but I'm glad to be back, and I'm glad that we are back.
I am too, yeah. It's, you know, some full disclosure here. We've had some, you know, technical difficulties and just trying to get people together, and I was away, and I had my first experience at the São Paulo, which we will talk about later. And, you know, it's, you know, we didn't have that many games. Now we're on international break. So it's just been one of those things where it's, you know, trying to get that consistency down. It's a rebirth. So we're going to try to be better with everybody and get some consistent content out here. Regrettably, Rafa will not be here today. So we do send our love out to Rafa, and we hope to have him on the next podcast. But us not being around certainly has not, you know, made for any less Napoli news. We've had so many games since we've last chatted, but we'll try to trim it down to just the last couple before the international break. So let's just get right into it. Napoli PSG, Champions League, huge sellout at the San Paolo. I think it was 60,000, a little bit over maybe. Really making the San Paolo a fortress, and Napoli draw PSG 1-1. They go down right at the end of the first half with some defensive errors. And, you know, going into the break there at halftime, I'm thinking, you know, maybe we just don't have it in us today. It was a little bit lackluster. After going down at PSG, you know, how did everybody feel? Going at home against PSG, how did everybody feel? Marco, what was your take after the first half?
After the first half, I mean, especially the way that first half ended, it was nervy, I'll say this. And honestly, given the way they had played in those first 45 minutes, I didn't think they would come back. And that scared the heck out of me. But to see the way they did pull it off somehow, some way, and earn that crucial point is absolutely huge for this club and for this team, because as we all know, they now sit atop the group, and a Liverpool draw or a Liverpool victory and a win at home against Red Star gets us through. And that's the important thing right now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I thought at halftime, you know, we looked a little sluggish. I thought we were giving them a lot of chances. I really thought at halftime, giving up a goal right, you know, right before the halftime whistle goes off, we're struggling a little bit, and, you know, getting a big penalty and Insigne stepping up really energized the crowd. And of course, you know, everybody went nuts. A hometown boy gets a penalty. And I thought the first 15 minutes of that second half was a completely different game. We completely dominated them. It looked like a big portions of that first match in Paris. Kirsten, any thoughts on Napoli PSG that you'd like to touch up on?
Well, it was an extremely strange match for me personally, because I was coming from the Maracana directly.
Yeah, of course.
Where Red Star just beat Liverpool. So I might not have been in quite my right mind. and then we were just, you know, I'm looking on my phone, making sure, you know, it's still nil-nil, everything's fine. We finally find a bar, because around the Maracana, you can't drink for like 2 hours before, 2 hours after. And I knew if I was going to watch Napoli PSG, I needed a beverage. so we made it far enough, got into the first bar we really saw, and I knew it was nil-nil, went straight to the toilet, came back, and PSG were ahead, and I just yelled, shit! And then I looked around the bar, and I noticed all the writings in French. I was like, and everybody was staring at me, and I'm thinking, this is probably not the best place to have just yelled that I was upset about Napoli going down. but they forgave me. so I don't know how we played. Obviously, I watched a little the replays, but replays don't usually show the bad of the game, I suppose.
Sure.
They don't show anything dull. but I know that I was thrilled to see what happened, because obviously I was upset, like every Napoli fan, that we were down going into that break. And when they came back out, I was nervous, and I was extremely impressed with what I saw when they came back out. And even though things are a little hazy for me that night, I remember being thrilled to have seen that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's one of those things that this season that you see, we see over and over again, is halftime changes. And I don't know whether Carlo just has the magic words at halftime, or, I mean, we saw it early in the season too, where, you know, Napoli go down early in the first two matches, come out at halftime, and they look like a completely different team. And I thought what they did to PSG for 15, 20 minutes on the other side of the halftime break might have been our best 15, 20 minutes stretch of the whole season. Mm-hmm. I mean, we pinned them in, and I mean, I think in that 15, 20 minute stretch until Insigne scores a penalty, we probably could have scored 3 or 4 times. They didn't look like they had, you know, a kick in the game. And, you know, sort of looping around to my point here, Carlo Ancelotti and the mentality here, especially in Europe, I mean, I just feel like we're a different club when it comes to that. I just see, Sadi used to say things like, in press conferences, like, it's a miracle we're here, and we're just glad to be a part of something with these great clubs. And you know that with Ancelotti, that's not what he's saying. You know, he's instilling that belief in these guys that they belong with the PSGs, that they belong with the Liverpools, that they can belong with these top teams in Europe. And when you play against these top teams like that, beating Liverpool at home, you know, two consecutive draws against PSG, who arguably have the best attack force in the world, and holding them to 3 goals in 2 games, I mean, those are the types of things that, you know, make you sort of puff your chest out a little bit and think to yourself as a player, you know what, maybe we are just as good as these guys and we can compete at this level. I'll throw it up to you, Kirsten, first. What do you think about Ancelotti and the Champions League mentality this season?
Well, I was going to make a joke about how I think it's his eyebrow at the break that really gets at me. But honestly, I'm not sure it's a joking matter. I don't know if I've talked on this podcast at all, but I was not thrilled with Ancelotti coming in, mostly because I just don't tend to like the older coaches. And I just wanted something different. And I'm so thrilled to be proven wrong. I normally don't like that, but in this case, I'm ecstatic. I think he, in this case, experience is vital. He knows how to rotate the squad. He knows, like you were saying, the mentality to both encourage the players beforehand, but also in the dressing room, he knows what to do to make sure they stay in the game. Because it would have been really easy especially in that last PSG game, for them to have come out and just, you know, accepted that they were losing. But I think he knows what maybe tactics to change or what little explanations need to be given, and also possibly how to manage in those situations.
Yeah. And you know what? I completely agree, because at first I wasn't very excited about Ancelotti coming either. He was a big name, and that was cool and that was nice, but I really wanted Conte, and I didn't think that would happen either, but I thought that's what Napoli needed. And, you know, we've talked about it in the past, and I don't want to get too much into it, but, and listen, I love Sarri, and I still do, and I think what he did with this club over 3 years was absolutely incredible, and it made us believers. But we were always that underdog, and you brought up a great point about that, is that we were always the team trying to compete and just trying to pull off this miracle, because we were really only, quote-unquote, competing against ourselves and just trying to beat our own points record and blah, blah, blah. And it really got frustrating when, you know, we beat Juventus in Torino, and we're a point behind them with 4 games left, and we're still talking about how our dream is not to win the Scudetto. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's where it kind of got frustrating. We saw that especially last year in Champions League. But with that said, I think last year we were all on board with not doing well in Europe if it meant winning a Scudetto, and ultimately that didn't happen. But this year, I think Napoli fans want a little bit more of this competition, and you're right, Ancelotti gives us that belief. He's that calming presence that this club desperately needs, especially with the turmoil that can be De Laurentiis at times, right, and the tornado that he can be. And Ancelotti just kind of calms everything down and speaks to even those big name players that may not want to deal with De Laurentiis. They can talk to Ancelotti, and he's always praising big players because they've all played for him, right? So I think in this competition especially, we would not be where we are if it wasn't for Carlo, and we got to be grateful for that.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, it's, as the season progresses, I think everybody was a little hesitant at the least when the appointment was made. I think there was that initial shock that, oh man, Ancelotti's coming. And then as you dissect it, you're like, okay, you know, I didn't have the greatest turn of form at Bayern, but I think we all know that it's kind of a different monster, where I think the players, and there's some political things going on at the club that, I mean, they're struggling this season too. Where sort of like you sort of give them a pass, because I don't really know the inner workings of Bayern Munich, but it seems like they have some internal problems that they have to deal with.
They absolutely do. Sorry, yeah. It's not a Bundesliga podcast, but yeah.
So that's just the vibe I get, that they have some type of issues going on. And so, I mean, the guy comes in and you're coming down off of that sort of big disappointment last year with Sarri, and you know, how great he's been and the type of football you play, and everyone's a little nervous. Are we going to play the same type of football? Are we going to be more negative? Is it going to be as appealing? And what he's done, I think, you know, in that sort of mental fortitude area is unparalleled. And I think the man management thing is maybe where you see the biggest gap. And I think that sort of transitions us nice into the Genoa match, where Carlo, again, I mean, the weather, it was a nightmare, and the fact that they even played the second half of that game, or I think for me, when they suspended the game and then decided 10 minutes later, after just letting the rain stop, that they were just going to throw the guys back out there and let it go instead of rescheduling the rest of the match, was kind of crazy. But hey, Serie A gonna Serie A, I guess. but, you know, Napoli come out against Genoa, they go down again in the first half. And this is the only, maybe the only trend under Ancelotti that I don't like, is we tend to go behind early, but at halftime he takes out both Milik and Zielinski, and, you know, whether or not, withstanding, you know, the introduction of Mertens and Fabian Ruiz changed the game, and we come out with a 2-1 win. So, I mean, we can touch a little bit on the Genoa match. I mean, the weather, I don't know. Thoughts, anybody, Marco, on the weather and how we played after that?
Listen, I agree with you. That game never should have restarted. I mean, that second half probably never should have started to begin with, but it never should have restarted. And there's no way that pitch could have passed the test, right? Like, when they drop the ball, like, I can't see that ball bouncing on that pitch, right? Because we saw players trying to make passes, and it didn't go more than a meter in front of them. Like, it was insane that they allowed that game to go on. But, and to be honest, especially with Napoli down a goal, I thought we would really end up paying the price, because I didn't think that those conditions suited the way we play. And imagine if Sarri was still around and we played Sarri style. I mean, forget about it, right? But with that said, they were able to pull it off, and it's wins like that that you need to get the job done and to prove that you are a legitimate Scudetto contender. Because in all honesty, that was probably the most Juventus way to win a game, right? Like,
agreed.
It was one of those games where, as a Napoli fan, if you were watching Juve play, you're like, they're going to blow it. We're going to catch up. We're going to gain some points. We're going to do okay. And then all of a sudden, they find a way to get two goals, not just one, but two to seal the deal. And that's what happened. And you know what? It's important to win those kind of games. And you know what? If you can get the job done on a cold, rainy day in Genoa, then you can probably get the job done anywhere.
Agreed. Let's Kirsten?
Well, I thought the game actually did end because my stream never came back.
That sucks.
Yeah, I followed the end on Twitter. So that's when I decided I'm really bad luck for this Napoli team because I never managed to see them score enough. But agreed. I don't think it should have been going. That's part of the reason why I thought it was normal that it didn't come back on my stream. But I don't know how deep we're getting into this one. Milik, y'all, he was not. I'm not good with tactics, and I'm more of a just gut feelings kind of watcher. But I guess it was just the way that we had to play our game in Genoa, and also the weather. He wasn't getting a lot of service, that didn't help. But to me, it also seemed that when he did get the ball, he just didn't have ideas of what to do with it.
Yeah, I think that Milik is my biggest concern with the Napoli squad at this point, as far as guys who are playing every match. I know Zielinski is a little bit enigmatic, but I don't have the expectations of him that I do of Milik, I guess. Maybe is the nicest way to say it. And I know Milik has come in and he's battling through two injuries, but at some point you have to put that aside. The season's going to be half over before we know it, and he's, you know, he doesn't seem to be struggling physically. But I just don't know. You know, I was watching a couple of the games while I was away, and I just don't. He's not physical enough to be a true target man where he can just hold the ball up and let Insigne and Mertens run in behind him. And he's not good enough with the ball at his feet to make people miss and make a move and then get to where he needs to be. He basically needs, and this is going to sound super negative, I don't mean it like really in a bad way, but he needs the ball to be put in the place for him to just smash it with that, you know, sledgehammer of a left foot. Because when he connects well, he hits the target. He's a super accurate shot, I find, most of the time. And, you know, he's good with his head, but the crossing service has been poor. And he just doesn't find himself in the positions to score often enough. You know, you see a guy like Mertens come in the game against Genoa, and even with the crappy pitch, he still comes on and changes the game. It's a weird one for me. I think that Milik will be frustrated he was pulled at halftime, because especially as the pitch got worse, maybe he probably felt, you know, he would have been able to help a little bit more. But I do think that right now the winning combination is Insigne and Mertens. You see, Mertens is having one of those stretches of form now where every time he touches the ball, something good happens. And I do think that Milik is someone who's still viable to come off the bench in the last 20 or 30 minutes, especially when you need a late goal, to just come in and, you know, get his head on the end of one, or get his left foot on the end of one as teams get tired, because he's a physical presence. But no, I agree 100%. I think that Milik, I think I posted on Twitter after the match against Genoa, that there were three players that Napoli needed to seriously look at for their futures with the club, and Zielinski, Hisai, and Milik were the three that I put. Diawara, Hisai, and Milik, not Zielinski. But, you know, I kind of got blasted on the Diawara one, but, you know, I think a lot of people are starting to see that, you know, the patience with Milik is going to start to run out. At the end of the day, you're a striker, and the only way to silence the critics is to score goals. And he's not doing it right now, as far as I'm concerned. But I think, you know, just to loop back to Napoli-Genoa, in the good light is, you know, the evolution of Fabian Ruiz and what this guy is starting to bring us now. He's getting comfortable with the team. I mean, to sort of adjust his body as that ball is stopping at the 18-yard box and hit it the way he did to score the first goal is pretty impressive. I think that, and the way he was physically holding the ball up, you know, on that, he was playing on that far side of the pitch that was completely waterlogged. And I thought that he did a really good job of being able to play sort of his style of play, even when, you know, the pitch wasn't cooperating at all. So I thought Ancelotti again with the tactics at halftime just really knocked it out of the park in that one. But no, I agree, Kirsten. Milik's patience level, my patience level for Milik is starting to wane. You know, it's sad, but it's the truth.
Yeah, and you know what? I think so is Ancelotti's, to be honest with you. And that's why we saw him sub at halftime, because rarely does Carlo do that. And the thing is with Milik, and I got some crap on Twitter about this too, because I said a couple of months ago that he could have been the difference maker last year between a Scudetto and not, just because he gives something that Napoli's team doesn't have anywhere else, right? With that big, tall presence in the box, he's that true striker that Napoli desperately need. And last year, Sarri's system became just too predictable, and if you had that presence in the box, Milik could have been that. But he hasn't been delivering this year. He hasn't. You know, and the thing is with him, we've never seen him throughout the course of a full season. So yeah, we know he can be a super sub and this and that, but we don't know what he can be. If he can be that striker that Napoli need week in, week out, game in, game out. And you know what? Ancelotti's always played with a true number nine. He needs that. And Mertens is proven, you know what? He is what he is. And he's been fantastic in that back heel. Like everything he does right now, like you said, he's got the touch of gold, but he's still not that true number nine. And that's why if you did bring in a Cavani, and I know it's still a pipe dream, and I know I don't want to spread rumors, this and that, but he would be perfect for this system. He really would.
He's
quick enough that, you know, he can play with the team, and he's that true striker that finds the back of the net when you need him to. And God, I hope that De Laurentiis can pull it off, because that would just be incredible.
Yeah. I mean, it would be perfect. And I mean, the reception he got when he came on at the San Paolo is very rare, because usually when players come back, they do not receive receptions like that, especially in a match that when he comes on is tied and it's Champions League and the whole thing. He still gets a standing ovation when he comes onto the pitch. So that tells you all that, you know, I think maybe all he needed to know to see, like, all right, these people will accept me back.
Yeah.
Because when he did leave, it was not on the best of terms. I think PSG came back for a friendly that summer, and he was whistled like crazy. So,
but hey, compared to the way Higuain left,
it's
right now.
Yeah, I mean? it's the Higuain effect. You know, no secret medicals, no going to Juventus. But you know, Higuain's getting his comeuppance on that. We all saw what happened to him last match week, where he completely lost his head. Shades of Lazio a couple years ago, or Udinese rather, shades of Udinese when he, you know, he really cost us, I guess, a little bit of both. He missed the penalty and got sent off. So, but we're not going to talk about that guy anymore, because I'm sick of hearing about him. So let's talk about Napoli so far this season. We're on an international break. It's just like that. It's what, the middle of November. The season is about a third of the way over, which is kind of crazy to think about. We'll talk about the league first. Napoli sit in second place, joint top goal scoring club in the league with Juventus at 26 goals in 12 matches. So pretty impressive. They've given up 13 goals this season. And I think five or six of those came in the first couple of games, Milan, Lazio and Samp. So, you know, seem to have gotten it together. A couple of the other teams behind us have sputtered a little bit. Obviously we could talk about the struggles of Roma. Inter dropped some points before last week. How do you, Kirsten, I'll start with you. How do you feel, you know, a third of the way through Serie A? I mean, I know we're still 6 points behind Juventus, but not too shabby to start the season, really. Kirsten? Uh-oh.
Did we lose Kirsten?
She's frozen.
No, I'm here.
Okay.
Only you can edit that out. Sorry. Brief internet technical difficulty. I am here. I think we've talked about it before that a lot of us did not expect that Napoli would actually be challenging for the Scudetto this season. So in terms of that, I think we're doing really well. We are still in contention as much as anybody can be when Juventus exists.
Yeah.
And obviously we're still a player in the Champions League, which we don't see that often, that we're both in contention. I mean, you know, we're not in real contention for Champions League. It's too early to say such a thing, but that we're not going to fall out of the group stage, hopefully, and we're still challenging for a title, was probably more than I'd hoped for. I think I thought it would take longer for everything to gel. And I think we'll circle back around to this, but I can't believe that both without the number nine that Carlo most likely wants and with some of those players at the back that we're actually managing to perform this well, and we haven't conceded that many goals recently.
Agreed. Marco?
Yeah, listen, I had Napoli coming into the season finishing third. I thought Inter would pass us, and you know what? They still might, because despite their recent loss, they still look like a great side as well. I think the big noticeable difference here is what we're doing in the cup competitions, right, with Champions League. And I actually predicted Napoli, and I still think they're going to win the Coppa Italia at the end of this year. And that you know, Juve double dominance, just because that's what Carlo does, right? He's great at tournaments, and so was Benitez. I was very critical of Benitez, but he was great at cup competitions. And if we can finish second, then you know what? Yeah, we want to win a Scudetto, and it would be amazing to see. But this year, I just, with Ronaldo and Juventus doing what they're doing, like, it's difficult. But with that said, I also think Juventus is going to slip up and slow down at some point. One, they've got a very tough December coming up, and they've got some pretty difficult games. I mean, they've proven they can get the job done in tough games, but they do have them to play, and they got to get 3 points in all of them, right? So I think there is potential for them to slip up. But with that said, I'm happy with the way this team's performing week in, week out. The adjustment period, there hasn't really been one. I thought that would be a problem coming to the season, that, you know, you transition from Sarri's system to Ancelotti's. But credit the experience of Carlo, because what he's done is he's just taken Sarri's system and kind of modified it and manipulated it to what works for him and alternated to use everybody's strengths. And that's what we're seeing. And I think we can all say that squad rotation has been absolutely fantastic to see. And I know that's not the sexiest thing in the world to say, but it's true. It's we're getting excited about squad rotation, and that's just because we were so
well
used to
it
seeing...
depends on the players.
You're right. You're right. And Mario Rui is driving me nuts. I think that's up.
Yeah.
I see there's a point for him. There's something he does for this team. He does give us that offensive fullback that we need, somebody down the wings who can provide crosses, but half the time his crosses haven't been there recently, which is even more frustrating to see. And we see teams kind of play down his wing to try to burn him and take advantage of that. And I love the makeshift 3-4 at the back in the Champions League with Maximovic playing there. I thought that worked really well, but even that is now becoming predictable, right? Because teams have seen that, right? There's only so many times you can surprise somebody. And I love the way Malcolm has been playing, so I'd give him more time. And Ken, I absolutely agree with you. Hisai, listen, Chelsea, if you're going to come right now with 50 million euros,
yeah,
you can have him.
Do it. Because I loved him under Sarri. I really, really did. And I there's a part of me that still does like him. But you know what? If you can get 50 million for him, take him, and we'll be happily to take that money and replace him.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I thought we were going to seriously see some growing pains, you know, or some transitional pains, because going from a system so rigid and, you know, the ball is going to be in a certain place every single time, and, you know, really have a system, you know, sort of ingrained into you as a player. We didn't really see much turnover in the team. You know, it's really the same group of guys minus Jorginho. I'm really impressed. I think that even through our transitional times, we got a couple of hard-fought, gritty wins, you know, the first couple matches of the season. And Carlo identified what he needed to do to change things to get things his way. And since then, I think that, you know, it's really surprised me. I thought we would be slow out of the gates and we would sort of creep back up into things as the season went on. But we really sort of hit our stride pretty close to the beginning of the season, and we haven't slowed down. I also thought in the league we might have a couple slip-ups, but we're winning a lot of these sort of, you know, classic, you know, banana peel games. You know, a game like Genoa is a match, you know, and I know everyone's going to get tired of us saying it, but I just don't see us winning that match last year, given the system, given that sort of like underdog mentality, and we're, you know, we can only worry about us type of thing. I just don't see us winning a match like that last season. So if we can keep, we're also, this last half of our schedule, both, you know, in the December and at the end of the year is a much easier run-in than I think we've had maybe in the last four or five seasons. So I'm going to keep that little tiny beacon of hope alive that, you know, everyone else's run-in is super difficult and ours is much easier. And maybe we can, you know, be close to it at the end of the season. I think having Juventus early in our schedule is to our advantage. I really do. And I think we've had some breakout players that, you know, we weren't expecting. I think Malqui, everybody was like, who is this guy? Who's this Odell Beckham Jr. lookalike that we have on our team? And he's really turned out to be quite a player. You know, he finds himself going forward a lot, and I think he finds himself out of position often, but he gets himself back to where he needs to be with enough time to recover. And I think that if you have a player like him, that's really the make or break with a guy like that. So he's really impressed me. I think, you know, obviously Maximovic and his role and being able to be a part of this team, a couple seasons removed from a big money move from Torino and basically being shipped away to Russia last season, you know, and to have him come back and play with confidence and feel like a part of this team. I think that's part of that, you know, Carlo effect, you know, that everybody feels like they're part of the squad. Nobody feels like they're an outlier aside from maybe Amadou Diawara, who is, his agent is making some noise about him being unhappy. But I mean, I think at the start of the season, you have your potential first team goalkeeper go down. I think Ospina has really grown into the season and been quite solid. I think everybody was bashing us for taking him, but I haven't seen him make too many mistakes, you know, that have cost us, honestly. And, you know, Koulibaly is rounding himself out to be the best center back in the world. And he also came out this week and said that even if a big money club wants to come after him, he's happy in Naples and he wants to stay. So only time will tell when it comes to that. But if that's true, then, you know, this guy's going to seriously have a statue built of himself in Naples. And I think that, you know, what Carlo's move with Insigne, what he's done with Lorenzo Insigne this season, moving him from the wide position to that sort of like roaming second striker type of position has been awesome to see. And Insigne is playing his best football of his career. So I think it's hard to be upset where we're at. And I think in the Champions League, you know, we're top of our group, you know, in a group that when we all saw the teams come in, we were like, again, this is happening again. And I think to have us in the last two matches at the top of the group with a, you know, a serious chance of qualification in the next match day is really, really something special. I think that hopefully we can continue the momentum. I think we will definitely hit dips in the road, but you know, I think so far a third of the way through, I think Carlo and the team gets, you know, a big thumbs up as far as I'm concerned. Anything else to add, folks, before we get to some not so nice news concerning Amadou Diawara?
Listen, I mean, in regards to him, Ancelotti has proven he's willing to give everybody and anybody a chance, right? And most people have made the most of it. He hasn't, not yet anyways. Yep. And you know what? He's still young and I can see his frustration. But at the end of the day, you've got to prove your point. You've got to prove yourself at a top level. And Napoli doesn't seem willing to loan him out in January, which is probably a good sign for him that they do deem him important. Yep. We'll probably see him play in the Coppa Italia when that kicks off in a few weeks now. So we'll see how that all goes down. But listen, you've got to make the most of your opportunities, right? And he's not the only one in that situation. I mean, Rogue has played a lot more than he has under Sarri, but at the same time, he isn't seeing a whole lot of minutes, right? But again, Ancelotti's giving these guys opportunities and he's letting them prove themselves on the pitch. And if they can't, then, I mean, really, that's up to them. You're a professional at this point.
Yeah. Kirsten, any thoughts
on... What exactly did he come out and say he's unhappy? Nobody knows that at Napoli.
His agent came out last week and said something along the lines of, you know, he should be playing more and he's unhappy with the club. And, you know, that's sort of swirling around the same time as there were some rumors that Wolverhampton... whatever. Wolves. I don't know.
Wolves. Just go Wolves. With
Wolves. Wolves. I don't know. Wolves is potentially lining up a 50 million euro bid for him. So
5-0? 50?
5-0. This is, like I said, this is agent rumor. So, you know.
Who is his agent, you know?
I don't know.
Is he one of the ones who stir the pot just to stir the pot, or
which agent isn't? You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, like, that was a stupid question.
Agent's going to agent. I think that he might be... I tried to look it up, and it said just said, like, undefined as his agent, because usually I have to find these things out.
I hope that's his name.
Yeah, Mr. Undefined. But... I think
wolves are a serious thing, and they have money, so it's not that out of the realm of possibility. But $50 million, okay, I don't
take him. Listen,
yeah.
Well, like at the end of the day, listen, he's young, and I know he's if got a ton of potential. But what is he?
So
done?
$50 million for him, $50 million for Hisai. We can get Cavani, right?
Cavani money, yeah.
Cavani and Ibrahimovic, if we really want.
Like, yeah,
those two together, and let's not put them together again.
Yeah. They can't be worse than Cavani Neymar right now.
True. Yeah, whatever. Neymar hurts my feelings with that. You can't. How can? Come on, Cavani. Like, there's room for everybody there. There's only three. Like those three guys. You can't make room for those three guys.
Well, did you see Brazil, Uruguay, what happened there with Cavani and those tackles on him? Yeah. Listen, you can just tell. Like,
they don't like each other.
They don't. Yeah.
They don't like each other.
And you know what? Well, fine, because there's plenty of people in Napoli who do like him. And listen, Eddie, come home, man. We're waiting for you, buddy.
Yeah, come home.
Speaking of Brazil, I would just like to take a small second to shout out Alan for getting his first cap for Brazil, which is maybe like two years late.
Coincidentally, right after the rumors of him playing for Italy go happen.
Yeah, right? I was going to say that.
It just needed the push. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where when you see him getting ready to come on the pitch as a sub, you can tell that he's been waiting his whole life for that moment. So well deserved. And he's obviously been one of our best players this season for the past couple seasons. So I'm super happy to see that. But yeah, Diawara, if 50 million comes in, I'd be happy to ship him off. And he can play. He can go from the sunny bay of Naples to Wolverhampton, England. I don't know where that is, but doesn't sound like doesn't sound as good as Naples to me. So moving on to some stadium stuff real quick. Earlier this season, just to give everybody a quick recap, Napoli and the city were going back and forth, and there was some serious accusations by the city about Napoli and unpaid rent, and then the stadium and ADL calling it a toilet, and the whole thing, you know, this happens every year, I feel like. And then magically, right before the PSG match, all this stuff seems to have, gone away, and now Napoli seem ready to sign a 5-year deal with the city for the San Paolo. A new 5-year quote unquote agreement, which I guess just means a lease. And in this international break, they are installing LED lighting system at the San Paolo, which I actually saw cranes on the field, pictures of cranes on the field. So that's actually happening. I guess that will sort of put to bed, at least right now, the thoughts of getting a new stadium. And after going to the San Paolo for the first time, I think my feelings about it are a little different, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't need to be renovated, or, you know, we need to at least have, you know, bathrooms in the stadium. So 5 years at the San Paolo, I think there's some sort of outlines of agreement that there's going to be some other upgrades as well. Thoughts on, you know, I think we all kind of know where we are on this, but I just wanted to touch on it because I thought it was newsworthy. Thoughts on 5 more years at the San Paolo with minor upgrades, Marco?
It's a Band-Aid, and that's the frustrating thing. It's another Band-Aid. It's another delay. Nothing's going to change. Nothing's going to happen, right? And that's the frustrating thing because, listen, this San Paolo's iconic. I get it. You love it. I've been there. It's in beautiful to a certain point, but at the end of the day, it's also a dump, right? Like, let's not try to hide it. Let's not try to put, you know, makeup on a pig. Like, that's what it is. It's a dump. There's holes in the ground. There's for toilets, right? Like, it can't meet any modern safety standards, right? Like, it's an absolute joke. And so when you're playing top teams in Europe and that's what they're coming to and that's what they're seeing, that becomes a problem. right? Again, the passion, you see how much it means to the people and the passion there when you're there. But you can build a new stadium because commercially and going forward, if this club wants to be able to compete with the best in Europe and even just with Juventus, it's going to need to upgrade, right? Because we've seen what that new stadium and how much further Juventus is ahead of the rest of Italy because of that new stadium and what it means. Yep. And so, you know what? I know that there's so much politics and corruption behind things that we have no clue about. But at the end of the day, something needs to change and something needs to happen. Because even like as a North American going there, I was shocked that I couldn't buy food, right? And maybe that was just naive of me and that was just foolish of me. But like, I was shocked that when I saw people bringing their own paninos and stuff, right? Like, it just didn't make sense to me because that's money you're just throwing out the window that you're not creating that revenue for. And I get Napoli's a different city and a different kind of people, and maybe they wouldn't be willing to spend that money in the stadium anyways. But at least have that option, because to me, you're just throwing away money at that point.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that for me, when I went, the craziest thing that I saw, or the, you know, it's like when you get there and, like, you know, we got to the stadium and, you know, you see all the vendors outside and you're like, okay, people are just, you know, buying stuff before. And then, you know, after that, you just like go in and you're like, I didn't leave where I was sitting the whole match. You know, I just stayed where we were in the curva and that was that. It was an amazing experience, but to the same point, it's like you need to have some kind of modern, you know, facilities, whether it's, you know, I mean, and by modern, I mean like, you know, just standard stuff like bathrooms and food vendors and everything else. Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Just to touch on my experience at the stadium, I just want to give a shout out to Get Napoli Ticket on Twitter. He really facilitated our whole experience getting the tickets, which is another thing that is a total nightmare if you're not from there and you don't have someone do you know or something like that to be able to like get the tickets. He facilitated the whole thing for me. He, you know, that those guys got me the tickets. They sorted us out. They met us. They did a lot of amazing things. And if you are a Napoli fan and you're looking to go to the San Paolo and join a match and go to a match, then I think that that going through Get Napoli Ticket is a great thing to do, because those guys really did everything. They met me outside the stadium and handed me my tickets, and we didn't have to do anything aside from just give them some information that they need for the tickets, and that's it. So honestly, if you're going to Naples, you want to go to San Paolo, and you don't know how to get tickets, which is really annoying and, you know, really kind of a pain in the ass to figure out, go to at Get Napoli Ticket, and those guys will get you sorted. I can't speak highly enough. I don't know how I would have done it on my own without them, to be honest, because when you get to the city and you try to get tickets, if you're not there a couple days before and you don't know where to go, it's really confusing. And then,
you know, they also have a drive home service that they have also, because public transportation after matches is an absolute disaster as well, which is another crappy part about, you know, where the San Paolo is. It's a little bit outside of the center of town. So if you need to take the train going back to the center of town after the match, there aren't enough trains and you don't know where to get a cab. So they do have a service where they will drive you back to your hotel or Airbnb or whatever. So I just wanted to take the time as we, you know, wind down this episode here to give them a personal shout out, and I will plug them in the show notes as well. Because I can't speak highly enough of what they did, and they really helped me get my first San Paolo experience, which was truly awesome. We sat in the Curva B with some friends that we knew, and we got to see, you know, we were there for all the songs. We were there for all the chants. We got to talk with some fans there. I got to see crazy, hilarious things, like people being crazy superstitious when Napoli were down by a goal in the last 10 minutes, and these two guys kept switching where they were standing next to each other, which was pretty awesome. And then one of the guys kept moving like five rows behind us and then coming back down and then switching with his friend. And it must have worked because Mertens scored with basically the last kick of the game. So
it's all to their credit.
Yes. The superstition is real. That Neapolitan superstition is real. But I wanted to make sure I gave them a proper shout out. Any other plugs I have? Let's see. The website is back up and running. Farfromvesuvius.wordpress.com. Some familiar faces back there. Frank Sidekick is up there doing some articles. We have Eric back on there. Massimo. We'll have a couple of other cameo blog posts coming up pretty soon as well. I think I do see a couple of Ask FFV questions coming in here right at the buzzer. We do have one, so why don't we just get to that? And it is from Frank. It's from Frank Sidekick. So Frank's question is, where do Dries and Lorenzo sit in your all-time strike partnerships for the club? They're not quite Magica for me, but they're up there with Cavani, Hamsik, Lavezzi, Vintage. Kirsten.
Well, that's just cruel because that is my, you know, to me, that's the start of my Napoli fandom, is the Holy Trinity there. And so for me to say that they're on par with that kind of feels like a little bit of a betrayal, because I loved that team so dearly. But I obviously I love those two as well, and I love tiny men, so that makes it even better. So I'd say maybe like just below that. We'll see. Maybe when I get to the end of the season, they'll be equal.
Marco,
yeah, for me they're up there with them. The difference is I feel like these guys have a better supporting cast. You know what I mean? Like, and that's not to disrespect, you know, that team and Mazzarri's era, but you can't compare. Listen, I loved Gargano, right? But you can't compare him to Alan, right? Like, you've got complete. You had Hugo Campagnaro was incredible at one point in time for us, right? But he's not Koulibaly, right? Like, there's just a different system in place, and Napoli's much more established. Expectations are a lot higher. You know, that was a Napoli team that we were celebrating when they made the Champions League, right? It was a party. It was a festa. That's not the case anymore because Napoli have grown over those years. So, and listen, if you look at the numbers, they're very comparable, right? Like, it's so hard to – the context is so tough, but, you know, they're right up there with them. And their only difference is these guys haven't sealed a major trophy yet. Right. Like, if these guys won a Scudetto, right, like, they've made us believers. As much as we loved, you know, Cavani and Lavezzi and Hamsik, that trio, there was never really the belief that we would win a Scudetto with them. Right. Like, I remember battling Milan one year and maybe believing we could do it when Ibrahimovic was still there. But it was nowhere near what it is now. Right. With that said, one of the greatest ways for that Holy Trinity to end was when Cavani scored that penalty kick against Juventus in that Coppa Italia final. For me, I tweeted out, that's still my favorite Cavani goal of all time, right? Because it sealed that era, and it ended Juventus's undefeated streak for that year because they went undefeated for the entire year. And it was also Del Piero's last game in a Bianconero jersey. So that also puts a big smile on my face that's how we were able to end his Juventus career.
Frank, I'm gonna go with the podcast team on this one. It was just weird and magical that, like, I mean, no disrespect to Andrea Dosena, but I mean, come on, man. Like,
it's true.
I mean, these.
Thanks for bringing that name back.
You know, you couldn't imagine a players, you know, of, not to disrespect them, but you couldn't imagine players of that caliber on this Napoli team. You'd be upset that like somebody's, you know, so quote unquote poor would be on your team. But, you know, those three guys really carried a team. You know, the supporting cast was okay. You know, I loved Inler. He wasn't even there for the all of it, but I mean, Inler was there. And but those guys really carried a team. And what Cavani and Hamsik and Lavezzi did that year in the Champions League, you know, when we were in that first horrible group with Bayern Munich and Manchester City and able to get out of a group like that.
Chelsea.
With those guys. I know. It ended. But I mean, you know, it's one of those things. We're playing Chelsea at a time, you know, when Chelsea is coming off of being, you know, they're being one of the biggest teams in Europe, and we're having our first run at the Champions League in the modern era, in the Champions League era. And so
we can be credited for winning that Champions League, because after they beat us, that's when they went on to do remarkable things. And we were the ones that sparked that Di Matteo hiring, right? So
that's right.
We'll take some credit for that.
That's right. We're only going to lose to Champions League winners, right? Real Madrid. And yeah, no, I think that Mertens and Insigne are just, as it stands right now, just one, maybe a half step underneath that Cavani, Lavezzi, Hamsik magic couple years that we had. And yeah, I mean, nothing will beat that moment of beating Juventus for the Coppa Italia. I remember that penalty goal, just like Marco said, and I remember the celebrations in Rome, in the curva right behind where he scored the goal, flares on the field and the whole rest of it after he scored. It was just one of those moments that, you know, it was one of the few times in Napoli's history where you can truly say that we, you know, got the best of Juventus head to head for something, you know, that wasn't just a match in the league calendar. So yeah, I think Cavani, Lavezzi, Hamsik get the nod for me. All right. I think we've made it through our first episode here, everybody. So I want to thank everyone for listening. We're going to be on all the major podcast channels, you know, everywhere you listen to your podcast right now. We should be popping up into your feeds or your queues. You can get at us on Twitter at Far From Vesuvius. I'm Ken, and with Kirsten and Marco, and we would just like to say, as always, Forza Napoli.
Sempre. Ali, 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 Napoli, Ali.